stiff little fingers and barbed wire love there. Well, I expected the slight technical hitch we had to take a little less time to sort out. It seems that it's been a bit reluctant, but we've got a workaround, so I think everybody can now hear me by one means or another. Thanks very much for your patience. And we might as well kick off with it, really. Some of you might remember that I think it was back in August, I played a conversation that I'd had with Truth Juice Dave whilst we were hanging out in a field at the Truth Juice Gathering. And we were talking about his ideas on vehicle registration and tax applications for our road machines and the like. We also talked a bit about upcoming bills through the Houses of Parliament, private members' bills, including turning the August bank holiday into Margaret Thatcher Day and the like. The thing is that we were pretty pushed for time then, and Dave was having to work from some fairly scattered notes he had with him, and we agreed at the time that we'd probably try and cover some of the information again in a bit more detail when everything was a bit more relaxed and he had access to all of his documents and the like. As a result, the first sort of 10 minutes or so of the recorded conversation I'm going to play this evening go over some of the same ground about the V62 and the V5C and other such interesting things, but with a bit more detail because he's got access to his computer, he's had time to prepare for the conversation that we had, and it means that he can give a little bit more detail. Also, he's now managed to get himself a couple of new machines to take out on Her Majesty's Highway, which means that he's actually had a chance now to put some of these things into action, so we can hear about some of the correspondence he's been having with those lovely people down at DVLA who don't seem to be able to get ahead of the right end of the stick at all. Also, when we recorded this Skype chat, Dave was even by his standards, he was really on one. I don't get anything like the time to do the kind of research that Dave does. He was one of the first people I actually met probably 3 years ago now who was actively involved with batting against his electricity supplier and his gas supplier, and he was having troubles with the benefits agency and all manner of people, and he was researching and acting in resistance to so many things when I met him, and has had a fair amount of success really one way and the other. I know that two or three times they endeavoured to cut his benefits entirely. I know there have been times when he had no money and no electricity and nothing. But one way or the other, by refusing to contract and refusing to consent and refusing to refusing to consent to any of the changes in the various contracts that he felt that he was working under, he has had a fair amount of success. And I would think that probably in the long run, he'll probably have a bit of success with his motor vehicles as well. That remains to be seen. We have agreed though that we'll continue chatting about it, so we'll be able to keep track of exactly what it is that happens, because I know that for many people, the tax to keep the car on the road and the MOT and the insurance are a fairly major bugbear. A lot of other things seem to have been sorted out, at least to some people's satisfaction. I'm particularly keen to find a way of working my way around these particular challenges. So, as I say, for the first 10, maybe 15 minutes or so, well, it's going to sound a bit similar to the last conversation that we had, but after that it goes off on its very own track. Dave's very deep down the rabbit hole, like I said in the blog, and he feels, and I think he comes up with some good reasons for suggesting that knowledge is of no use to us without action, and that now the time has come for everybody to get out there and to be doing something. He's got a few suggestions as to what we might do, and he's certainly got some very interesting ideas as to the kind of jurisdiction that we seem to be being rushed into, as usual, on the QT. It's all out there on the government website. You can go and have a look at the upcoming bills that are currently travelling through the House of Lies, or both of the Houses of Lies, in fact. And So what I'll do is I'll turn it over to Dave. I'll try and find whatever links he comes up with on the way through and paste them into the chat box if I make it into the chat box. If not, I'll just have to travel blind. But here it is, a conversation that I had 10 days ago or so now with Truth Juice Dave. There have been further developments, which hopefully I'll get a chance to talk about a little bit after we've listened to this. Thanks to all of you for being out there. It is, of course, Dr. Rock's radio show. I'll see you in, the other side of this interview, really.
Humbled again. Now people would want to listen to what I have to say.
Well, I don't know about other people, but I personally, I learn useful stuff every time I listen to you, so I think it's only fair to let other people have a listen as well. Should we kick off with some of the ideas you've been developing on the paperwork that we get from the DVLA and how it is that we might try dealing with the fact that we're apparently forced to register our vehicle?
Well, I don't believe that to be true. I believe that to be that we actually don't read things critically. Many years ago, I used to sell motor cars, and I sold, I don't know how many cars I sold, new and used, and I do remember bringing this particular point up to my manager, and he just said, oh, don't be bloody stupid, just fill it in and put the names in there. And I just forgot about it completely, and just carried on with the program that everybody else is running. By the way, I picked up a brand new car today.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I've got a lovely, it's not lovely really, but it's bloody fast. It's a Vauxhall Astra 2-litre diesel turbo injection SE estate, and it goes like stink.
Wicked. Did you choose to get rid of the other one, or were you kind of forced to have
it? The lease was up. In fact, the lease was up 6 months ago, but I kept on to it. But anyway, an interesting thing, when I went to pick it up, I said, where's my tax disc? And the salesman said, well, we don't issue tax discs anymore. They come straight from the DVLA. And I said, well, it's against legislation to drive a car without a tax disc. And he said, well, with new cars, we just give you this letter, and if you get pulled off by the plod, you just produce that letter, and they let you on your way. And I said, well, they haven't changed the legislation as far as displaying the tax disc is concerned. I said, not that it bloody bothers me anyway. they haven't changed the legislation for that purpose, you know. Anyway, he said, oh, you'll be all right, you know, just show them this letter. So for some reason, where a main dealer used to issue their own tax discs, they've taken that facility away from the main dealer. Don't ask me why. And apparently I'll get a tax disc within the next 14 days.
It's still included in the kind of the purchase of the machine then? Did you have to apply?
Yeah.
Apply for it? Right.
Well, no, you just make signatures, don't you? I think the dealer applies for the tax disc, and they just charge you on the road charges. But anyway, let's go on to the subject of purchasing road tax and registering your vehicle. Hopefully there's people listening to me, and hopefully there's people listening to me that don't know this. For those that do already know this, I apologise in advance for teaching my granny to suck eggs. Right, but I'm going to bring up the V62 document. Right, it's available on the DVLA website. If you just type in V62 on your Google and just go to the form itself, and what I'm going to do is read through the first part of the form, which is the instructions for applying for a vehicle registration certificate. When should you use this form? Use this form to apply for a vehicle registration certificate V5C. If you have bought the vehicle but have not received the V5C in your name, or because the original has been lost, stolen, damaged or destroyed, blah, 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 blah. If you do not, and then part B, filling in this form. If you do not give details in this application, we will not be able to deal with it and will retain it for you to fill in. Please remember the following. Provide the vehicle details. Provide your full names, not initials. If you're a business organisation not registered PLC or limited, please provide the name of the person responsible for the vehicle in the boxes. Do not give joint names. Give an address in Britain. PO boxes are only acceptable for applications within a company or a postal address. Right, now let's get to the meat and bones, shall we? If you look at F in the notes, it says, what to do if you also need to tax your vehicle? If you are already recorded as the registered keeper of the vehicle, you can tax your vehicle at the DVLA office by using this form and the following documents. Application to tax this V10, application to tax a heavy goods vehicle, V85 form. Your insurance certificate and MOT certificate, if you need one for your vehicle, must be valid on the date of the tax disc. Right? That's interesting, isn't it?
It is.
Paul Ferry states, what to do if you also need to tax your vehicle. And then it goes on to say, your insurance and MOT certificate, if you need one.
Yeah, which suggests that perhaps some people don't.
Well, it suggests that what to do if you also need to tax your vehicle suggests do you need to tax it? Right?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on. We'll move on. Right, now, this is the main page where you fill everything in.
Just so that people know, Dave, if you stick in DVLA V62 into your favourite search engine, it'll give you a PDF of this so that you can actually follow along. And the same, because I assume we're going to probably be looking at the V5C as well, are we?
Yeah, we are. The V5 2C. Just bear with me a second, I've got a cat scratching at the door.
Okay. Sorry
about that, Nick, but you know what my cat's like. It's a pain in the arse.
She's pretty insistent. I don't know where she gets it from, Dave.
I'm just a can opener and a door opener. Right, okay, so the V5 2C, this is the part where you fill in the form. It says vehicle details, vehicle registration number, make, model and colour, tax class, for example, private stroke light goods, petrol car disabled. And then it asks for the chassis number and the frame number.
Yeah.
Right, and then it says the keeper details. It says business or organisations not registered as PLC should also provide the name of the person responsible for the vehicle in the boxes below. And then it's got Mr, Mrs, Miss, Ms, Doctor, business or organisation's name, first name, surname, and then for company use only. Now, that's in a box, that's all in the same box. So it's basically saying, if you're a business or an organisation not registered with PLC or Limited, you should provide the name of the person responsible for the vehicle. So, you only fill that out if you're a business or an organisation.
I guess people just assume that you fill it out anyway, don't they?
Well, this is my interpretation of it, reading critically, right? Bearing in mind that on the other side of this document, it says for people who need to tax their vehicle. Right, now, if we go back to part one again, which is the vehicle details, it says tax class, for example, private stroke light goods, petrol car disabled. Now, for example, a couple of months ago, I went onto the DVLA website. Don't bother now, because it's gone. Right? And you can find out which vehicles are tax exempt. And it gives you, or it did give you a list, but it didn't give you a comprehensive list. And the likes of police cars, road builders, ambulances, fire engines. There's a whole list of them. There is 40 of them or more.
Really?
Right, and it said, tax-exempt vehicles, examples. Right, now there was loads of them, but they were only the examples. What I'm suggesting here is private stroke light goods is a commercial vehicle because you're carrying light goods. If you're only in the private, you would put in there private, not light goods. You don't carry passengers, you only carry guests, i.e. your nan, your mum, your mate, your daughter, your son, your friend, right? You're not carrying for commercial purposes. Uh-huh. So if you taxi as private light goods, or put the tax class in as private light goods, then you can use it in the private and in the commercial. But if you just put it in there private, you can just use it for the commercial, the private stuff, but not commercial. And that's what I believe are tax exempt private vehicles. Right? Because in the keeper details, it says businesses or organizations not registered should also provide the name of the person responsible for the vehicle in the box below. Right?
Yeah.
And then it says business or organization's name. Let's say it's Shell, and you're a representative for Shell, then you put your name because you're a worker and you're only the keeper. Okay. Now, then it says first name, surname, all in that one box. And then it's got company for company use only, the DVLA and the DVA fleet number. And then it's got current address, contact number, email, and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're in two different boxes. Now, we know the script on boxes. The inclusion of something is the exclusion of everything else. So business or organization's name only means those who have got a business and have got a keeper, a representative of that company working for that business. Now, if you have a look at the greyed out area on the right hand side, it says official use only. VC, which is, I don't know what that is, but MKE is make, MDL is model, CLR is colour, TC is taxation class, and then you've got another couple of boxes, and then there's a thing called, it says DVLA date stamp. Now this is an agreed out area, it says official use only, V62, and it says DVLA date stamp, and there's a box. And then it's DOE and all the rest of the characters. Declaration. I have checked the information on this application. As far as I know, it is correct. If I find the B5C or the previous keeper gives it to me, I'll send it to the DBLA. Signature. That is a statutory declaration that you're filling in. So when you fill it in as Joe Smith, the man, you're making a declaration that you're a business.
Yeah.
Right? So everyone here who's listening who's got their, what they think their own car, have made a statutory declaration to tell them that it's going to be used for private and light goods in business, and that they are a business.
And they've been kind of fooled into doing that, really, because I guess you what you're suggesting is that this stuff only needs to be filled in if you are a business, and that if you're not, you don't need to fill those boxes in anyway, and it's just a private machine.
That's my interpretation of it, right? Okay. Now, these people don't make mistakes. They do not make mistakes. And they leave the clues there. Right? Okay. So, we've looked at the greyed out area, or the blued out area, which says DVLA date stamp. Now, I need just to go to another document. I'll just bear with me while I'm searching it. So, if you're not a business, you cannot be a registered keeper. Right, okay.
I see what you mean. So the individual that's being named as responsible for a business is only for a business, and that's what the registered keeper bit means.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, and don't forget, it says if you're applying for a tax disc, or if you need to apply for a tax disc, you must provide blah, blah, blah. And then it also says if you need it, just bear with me, let's go back to it again. You can tax your vehicle at DVLA local office by using this form. Your insurance certificate and MOT certificate, if you need one for your vehicle, must be valid on the date the tax disc starts. Now, the MOT certificate, we can look at that and say, well, you only need an MOT if it's more than 3 years old. So don't worry about the MOT. But according to the Road Traffic Act, everybody needs insurance. Oh, sorry. No, every person needs insurance. Every person who's got a vehicle needs insurance, needs that vehicle insuring. So why are they saying your insurance certificate, if you need one for your vehicle, must be valid? Why are they saying that? Because there must be vehicles that don't need insurance.
Well, we know that the police drive around without insurance, don't we?
Oh, they're bonded, that's right. That's right. Now, let's go to the application for the tax disc now.
What's the number?
Yet again, on section one, it says business or organisation's name. Now, if you look on the right-hand side, again, it's not greyed out. It's not greyed out this time or blued out. It's in plain white. This is a V10, by the way.
Okay.
And and there's a box there that all it says is date stamp. Does not say DVLA stamp. It says date stamp. Now, according to the Stamp Act, he who pays the stamp duty on an instrument is the beneficiary of that instrument.
Mm-hmm.
So if you buy the stamp and put it on there and sign it and date it, that means that you're the beneficiary of that instrument. And that's payment of that instrument. Again, it's saying on section 2, vehicle details, for example, private stroke light goods. Now, they are two different classes that can be one. So if you were to put private, that means that it's not light goods. And then you say, it's asking you, how long do you want the tax disc to run? 6 months or 12 months. And then to pay your applicable fee, but if you pay the stamp duty on that legal instrument, you become the beneficiary of it. Have a look at the Stamp Act, I think it's 1882 or whatever it is. Right?
It is interesting that I hadn't noticed the difference between the greyed out and the blued out and the fact that that one isn't, which does seem to suggest that anybody can do that.
Well, it says official use only. But it doesn't say DVLA stamp, it just says date stamp.
And who's going to define who's official?
Well, that's right. So, I do believe, and I put it into practice, by the way, and I'll go into that in a few seconds, that the private man cannot be a registered keeper. They can only be the keeper. Right? And the private man who's travelling in private doesn't have to pay road tax and doesn't have to have his car insured and doesn't need the MOT. Now, I'm not saying to people for 1 minute drive without insurance or travel without insurance. But what I will say is this. There's the MIB, the Motor Insurance Bureau, right, which indemnifies anybody that's had an accident with an uninsured person. And an uninsured person, I also mean an insured man. And the Motor Insurance Bureau coughs up every time. Because I believe that the Motor Insurance Bureau is part of the national insurance. I've not been able to prove it yet because I haven't dug deep enough. But that's my belief.
I had heard a rumour that basically that everything is insured anyway, and that in most cases all they're doing is taking it off us again when there's no need to do it.
Well, there's no such thing as money, Nick, anyway.
Well, no.
There's pieces of paper that people sign, that's all it is. You know, all this illusion of these people who have billions in the bank, that's an illusion. That's an illusion that they'll find out when the banks go bust. Because let's look at the Financial Services Authority. They keep pumping it out to us every day on the radio, on the television. Don't worry. If your bank goes bust, the Financial Services Authority will insure you up to £85,000. Well, that's no bloody good if you lose £5 million.
No, and anyway, I mean, quite apart from anything else, I looked at that and thought, well, there's no way anybody can guarantee that anyway, even if the money did exist, it would be just really, really odd if, you know, all of that could disappear and somebody could just go, oh, it's all right, here's another pile.
Yeah, so anyway, right, let's have a look. I'm trying to dig out the lessons now. So I bought a vehicle, it's going to be 2 months ago now. 6 weeks, 2 months really. I'm just trying to find the lessons for you.
So you're actually trying to put some of this into action now, are you, with the new machine?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
I know you've been dying to give it a go.
Yeah, well, I haven't had the money to get a vehicle, but now I've got a couple of vehicles now. So I purchased a vehicle, it's, you know, a little old Nissan, 11, 12 years old, cracking little car. Anybody's looking for a cheap car, give us a shout, it's a beauty. But let me get through this before the seller. So I purchased this car from a guy not too far away from me, and I thought, right, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try it and see what happens. So the V5 2C, which is the small slip in the V5 itself, it's a small slip and it's in yellow. And it says, new keeper's details. Now that piece of paper, the previous keeper keeps hold of it and sends that to Swansea to inform them who he sold it to. Right? So, me being an awkward bastard that I am, and knowing as much about this enemy that we carry around with us, which is our name, enemy, and the meat, I thought, well, okay, I'm going to fill this out as I'd like to be named. So I put David, a child of God, anti-Nazis, sui generis, as my name. And the address as Truth Juice Dave and where I inhabit, which is in Liverpool. The address in Liverpool I inhabit.
Mm-hmm.
But part of the address was my surety name, David Jones, right? And I know a lot of you out there know me saying his surety name. It's not a surname, it's a surety name. And you're the kind of soul for it. So I've stopped using it. Unless there's a benefit for me.
Yeah.
If there's a benefit for me, yeah, I'll use it. Because according to the Human Rights Act 1998, I have the right to the security of the person. Right? So that means that's the security is the surety, and I can use that. So I put my address down as Dave Jones and the rest of the address. But my name was David Antinatus Sui Generis. So I just gave it to him and said, there you go. He said, okay, thanks. So he must have posted that off to Swansea. And I was waiting to see what happened, you know, whether I received a new V5 or not. Anyway, it must have been about 3 or 4 weeks later, Sunday morning. The bloody hell's that, you know, open the door, and it's the guy who bought the car off. And he said, listen, I've got a problem here. I said, what's that? He said, DVLA have sent me a letter saying if I don't provide them your full name, I'm going to get an £80 fine.
Really?
Absolutely. So I said, well, I know you've got no idea what I'm going to say here. I said, but that is blackmail for the start, right? Because it's got nothing to do with you, what I'm doing with them, right? I'll write to them, and you can write back to them and say, the man who bought the car off me, his name is David, a child of God. And his address is David Jones, da-da-da-da-da. And I'll write to them myself.
We can call ourselves what we like, can't we?
Well, if you call yourself, I'll go into this a bit later, but if you call yourself a child of God, a whole new ball game opens up. And I'll talk about that a bit later. So, I wrote, just bear with me, let me find it. Places, just going to go back in places again, because I'm going to read a letter that I sent to them.
I can't believe they actually had a go at the bloke who sold you the car, because all he did was do what people do. He got you to fill the form in and he sent it. It's got nothing to do with him at all.
Oh, that's right, that's right. Right, so anyway. So anyway, I wrote to
bastards.
Them, David, child of God, anti-Nazis and all that, vehicle services, because I didn't want to go customer services because I'm not a customer. So I sent it to vehicle services. To whom it may concern, I'm writing to you to inform you of my purchase of the above vehicle and understand that you have been terrorising the previous registered keeper with threats of fines for not furnishing my details correctly. Which, by the way, is illegal and void under the Bill of Rights 1689. My details are as above. My Christian God-given name is David, and I was born before the legal fiction person that was created on a birth certificate and registered with the Crown Corporation. I understand that according to the Human Rights Act 1998, I have the right to the security of the person, but in this matter I choose not to exercise that right, or be associated with it, as I intend to use this mode of travel in the private at all times. I direct you to update your records to show the Nissan Tino mark with the registration number as without a registered keeper, but it is kept in the private and is now a private mode of travel. Now, I sent that off on the 12th of November. I received a letter back I think it was last Saturday, which was dated the 14th of November, but I got it last Saturday. Mm-hmm. And it says, "Dear Sir, Madam." Oh, it's addressed to the occupier.
Is it?
Yeah. Right. And it's from a Pauline Williams in Swansea. And it says, "Dear Sir, Madam, request for form further information. Vehicle registration number. We need some more information about the vehicle before we can deal with your application. Please fill in the information asked for below, sign, date, and return the filled-in letter." And then it says, "Information requested. Can you please supply your full name? Thank you." And then it's got lines for the reply. And then it's your daytime telephone number. Right? And then it says, "Providing contact details may help us to resolve any problems with your application more quickly. I declare that I've checked the information provided above, and to the best of my knowledge, it is correct, with a place for a signature and a date. Yours sincerely, Pauline Williams, Central Casework Group." Now, I didn't apply for anything. Right? So, I sent their forms back to them with this cover and letter. "Pauline Williams, your letter to an occupier on my above abode was delivered on the 21st of November. I have to say there are no occupiers or militia who live, reside or dwell with me. You may address me as David. Your letter requests for more information from the occupier about the vehicle and goes on to ask what the occupier's full name is and carries on to what I only can describe as a request for a statutory declaration from a legal person. Although I have the right to use the legal person, I choose not to in this matter and I wish to stay in the private. In my last letter to you, see attached, which I've given a copy of, I notify you that the mode of travel with the mark, which is the registration mark, has now been purchased by myself, David, from the previous owner, stroke registered keeper, and that it is now to be used in private only, or until I resell it. I am of the understanding that I purchased the mode of travel of the previous owner in good faith, and understand that they have a full and loyal and equitable title to the property. Should this not be the case, and that the DVLA has a share of interest in this property, please supply me with your proof of title to enable me to take steps to report it to the police and seek remedy of the vendor for misleading me. However, I cannot imagine the vendor was acting in fraud. Once again, I do not wish to be a registered keeper. Just a keeper will be fine, and I instruct you to update your records to show this mode of travel as private and not private like goods or PLG, PC, or any other acronym you tend to use, as there will be no commerce conducted while using it. I am unwilling to disclose my private telephone number to you, and wish all communications to be in writing. I look forward to you confirming your records have been updated, or receiving proof of interest or ownership, share, or in full in the property discussed. Thank you." Now, I posted that on the 23rd. I know it's only the 29th now, and I'm still awaiting the reply. So, that's that. That's the stage I'm at now. I haven't used the vehicle, right? Because I'm waiting for an answer from that. Now, the bugger if they answer it, the bugger if they don't.
Yeah.
Because they're going to have to come back and say, "Yeah, we've got a loyal title in that." In which case, right, I'm going to go to the previous keeper and say, "Do you realise that you didn't own that car? And here's the proof." Right? And let's trace it back to the very first time it was sold. because everybody that bought that car from it was new has bought it mistakenly and never had ownership of it. And even the man that bought it from the bloody main dealer didn't have ownership of it. So that means the main dealer acted in fraud by selling it.
Yeah. So you're working, you're working on proving a point that we've suspected for some time.
Absolutely. And that means that the United Kingdom PLC acted in fraud by allowing the main dealer to sell something that it wasn't his to sell.
Yeah.
Because the United Kingdom imported that car. So the United, we know this is going, we know what's going on now. Right? But it's time we started doing something about it. Now for those who are listening to all this and learning all this for the first time, you've got an excuse for not doing nothing, because this is going to sound bizarre. But if you know it and you're not doing anything, right, you're with them. I'm going to come across stuff in the next hour I've got left, or less than an hour. I'm going to have to move on quickly. If you're not doing this sort of stuff, I'm afraid you're helping them.
Well, you can't. Anyway, we're kind of party to a fraud anyway, aren't we?
Absolutely we are.
Once you know, anyway.
Yeah. Right, I want to move off from the vehicle now, the DVLA.
Are we going to get on to the Child of God thing? I'm quite interested about that.
Child of God? Yeah. Well, what is God?
Oh, you're going to get all existential on me now.
No. What is God? God is a creator. Who created you, Nick? Your mum and dad created you.
Yeah. So they tell me anyway.
If you've got a child, I've got a daughter. She's 22. I created with my missus a child, so I'm a creator, and I'm her God. And my God was my mum and dad. And my mum and dad's God was their mum and dad. And their mum and dad was the God. And go right back to the days of Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
So we're all child of creation, God. God is creation, and we're part of that. So we are actually creators, and if you like, gods. Yeah, because we can create things. Gods can create. I'm not saying I'm the total creator God. I'm not saying that. I might be, but I'm not sure. But we are gods. There's no question about it. Because you can create things. So can I. These corporations, the government, are pieces of bloody paper. They can't create anything. They need other creators to function. Because without other creators, the MPs and those criminal gangs, the House of Lords, the House of Commons, the bloody, the House of Lords and Commons cannot do anything without other gods. What I'm here now to do is tell people what I've been doing, what I'm doing, and if you want to call it technology, the stuff I'm using to bring the system to task and to get what I want, which is peace of bloody mind and freedom. And for instance, I got a letter last Saturday along with the DVLA letter from a guy, the pensions director from the DWP, which stated that my age of retiring now has gone from 65 to 66. So I wrote back to him, and his name's Graham Wallace, he's the pensions director. And today we received your letter, dated November 2013. I'm happy to know that my state pension is negotiable and is dynamic in its essence. Back in 1976, when I unwittingly and unknowingly and by silence accepted a contract with the government of the United Kingdom of that day, to pay the United Kingdom instalments out of my earnings on a weekly, monthly basis while in employment, which would ensure me a state pension when I reach 65. I now have a letter which may be an offer of a contract to alter the terms and conditions of the agreement made in 1976 with us by moving the age of retirement to 66. I do not accept this offer of changing the terms and conditions. In fact, as the contract is dynamic in its essence, I would like to make my own offer to change it myself. I am now offering a change in this contract to enable me to retire and receive state pension at the age of 54, which comes in February next year. I do not agree with your offer. I instruct you to retract it and put in place my terms and conditions and notify me of this within 14 days. Now, in their rule book, if he doesn't write back saying bugger off, you're mad, or bugger off, it's statute, right? If he doesn't write back and say no, then they tacitly agree. So they will have to start paying me my pension when I'm 54, which is next year.
These people now, they must really love you, Dave.
Now, if they say, no, you can't have that, and I say, if that's the case, the contract's void or voidable, and I'm making it void because you're not keeping up with your end of the bargain. I don't give a shit what David Cameron says. As far as I'm concerned, David Cameron and his buddy Nick Clegg, is it, are an unlawful government. Because a coalition, definition of a coalition, is an unlawful agreement not to do a thing. A conspiracy.
Is that right?
Right. That's the legal definition of a coalition. An unlawful agreement not to do a thing, a conspiracy.
Because I'm struck by that, because I have noticed that it's not just us that's got a coalition. They're springing up all over the world, aren't they?
Absolutely they are. Now, you're going to see why in a minute, because I'm going to bring something up to you. Right? So this government made an unlawful agreement, and they conspired against the United Kingdom of Great Britain, and there's a reason why, and we'll go into that in a few minutes, right? Every one of them parties had a mandate before the election to say, no, we're not going to go in with the Liberals, no, we're not going to go in with Labour, and the Liberals say, no, we're going to go in with Conservatives. And that was their mandate. And what did they do? They conspired not to do a thing. What did they conspire not to do? To have another general election.
Yeah.
Nobody won. Right? Now that is against the law. However, 12 months before that, they changed the law, the statutes, so that they can do that. But in its essence, it's against the law. It's not against statutes, it's against the bloody law. So anyway, and in France, it's punishable by jail, a coalition. Anyway, so I don't give a damn what bloody David Cameron says and what policies and what statutes this government have brought out since they came in, because every one of them is unlawful because they shouldn't be there in the first place. Ab initio, from the start. So if they don't give me my pension next year, February, I'm going to void the contract and say, right, well, I'll have all my tax back and all my national insurance back, please, because you've gone against the terms and conditions that were set out when I silently and unknowingly and unwittingly agreed with it in 1976, because it is a contract.
And is that a breach of trust as well as a breach of contract?
It's a breach of contract, and it makes it void.
Yeah.
It's a contract. The National Insurance is a contract. Because it's, you can pay your stamp or you don't have to pay your stamp. And you can pay your income tax or you don't have to pay your income tax. Only persons are liable for income tax. The man is not liable for income tax. But we just pay it anyway. So anyway, that's that. I'll move on. Oh, no, I won't move on. because there's a couple of things I want to talk to you about here while we're on the bloody government. Let me find it. Right, okay. This is going to shock everyone, this one. By the way, I don't know whether you all know, but did you know that Richard Branson and his employees are all going to get bloody guns? British Transport Police are going to be armed. There's a bill going through Parliament right now under the Firearms Act 1963. If you look at it, you'll find that the British Transport Police are going to be armed. That's good, isn't it?
One of the reasons I don't like using airports is because of the number of people wandering around in the places with vicious-looking guns about them.
I mean, I brought these things, these bills going before Parliament up before, right? I've brought them up, and those who haven't seen the upload on We Are Change with me at St. Anne's, New Horizons, please go and look at it, because it goes through a whole list of bills that are going through Parliament now. There's a bill going through the Parliament right now, right? And it's stated, what's the bill known as? Just bear with me. It's called Rights of the Sovereign and the Duchy of Cornwall Bill. Okay. Get this one. This Act may be cited as the Rights of the Sovereignty and Duchy of Cornwall Act in 2013. Let me read it to you. It's not gone through yet, but it's going through. It's in the Lords. We'll find it. Where the flipping heck is it? The wording. Right. Removal of Queen's and Prince's consent. Nothing in any rule of law or the law or practice of Parliament shall require a Parliament to seek the consent of the monarch, the Prince of Wales, or the Prince Regent to the consideration of public bills which pass through Parliament.
Really?
Don't take my word for it. Go on the Parliament website.
But that one goes back a long way, doesn't it?
You can see what's coming, can't you? I'll read it again. It's Section 3, right? It's cited as the Rights of the Sovereign and the Duchy of Cornwall Act 2013. Nothing in any rule of law, or the practice of Parliament shall require a Parliament to seek the consent of the monarch, the Prince of Wales, or the Prince Regent to the consideration of public bills which pass through Parliament. That is bloody serious. You know what that gets shut out? Habeas corpus, the Bill of Rights, the Magna Carta, more importantly, the Royal Law. And the Queen's Bench. That's my interpretation of it. Read it yourselves.
And that the YouTube vid you just referred to at New Horizons, is it Justice, the Courts, and Your Rights? Okay, I'll just stick the link into the chat box, people. Sorry.
It's the one in August. It's the one in August.
Okay.
July it was, yeah. And there's also, it's on Truth Juice Birmingham as well. So, Truth Juice Stonehenge site.
Right.
The gathering, this year's gathering at Truth Juice, it's also on there. But with that one, I go into the subliminals. It's only on the back half hour where I talk about this sort of stuff. Did you know that the American tax laws and the British tax laws are exactly the same right now? It's just coming to force the other day that taxation, or America's taxes and the British taxes are all one right now. And that's been passed. And it's had the full assent. The The death penalty is about to come back, by the way. The alleged terrorists are going to be exported. Not convicted, alleged. And where are they going to be exported to? Where are they going to be exported to? Well, why are they building 70 prisons right now? 70 prisons are getting built right now. Now, I don't know what they hold, but 70 of them are getting built.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on a bit more, shall we? Where are we? So we can close that now. Right. Private bills. Private bills. I spoke to a journalist at the gathering of fruit juice at Stonehenge. I'm not mentioning any names, right? But he's supposedly one of the better journalists, an investigative journalist. Let me read this to you. Private bills are usually promoted by organisations like local authorities or private companies to give themselves powers beyond or in conflict with the general law. Private bills only change the law as it applies to specific individuals or organisations rather than the general public. Groups or individuals potentially affected by these changes can petition Parliament against the proposed bill and present their objections to committees of MPs and lords. And then it goes on to say how private bills start. Now, private bills, you can have a private bill. You can make a private bill if you want, right? The only problem is you've got to go through a parliamentary agent, and it costs millions. And parliamentary agents are solicitors. Isn't that interesting? The bloody the liars and the bloody bar members, again, getting the fingers in the pie. Like the private bills are usually promoted by organisations like local authorities, right, to give themselves power beyond or in conflict with the general law. So every bloody council out there makes its own law by going and putting in private bills. Now this is where we come into the Court of Leith and the manorial courts. Now, when you get a liability order from your council, it's held in a magistrate's building, but it's not a magistrate's court. They hire the court out, and they process 2,000, 3,000 liability orders with one signature. Right? And that is called a manorial or Court of Leith. Where's it gone now?
Here we go. I've got a thing here. It says that it's in the past tense, but this is from the Ulster courtleet.co.uk, and it said the Court Leet's duties were to inquire regularly and periodically into the proper condition of watercourses, roads, paths and ditches, to guard against all manner of encroachments upon the public rights, whether by unlawful enclosure or otherwise, to preserve landmarks, to keep watch and ward in the town and overlook the common lands, adjust the rights over them, and restraining in any case their excessive exercise, as in the past Blacks Castle.
Let's have a look at Black's Law definition, shall we?
Yeah.
The name of an English court of record held once in the year, and not oftener, within a particular hundred, lordship or manor, before the steward of the Leith, being the King's Court granted by charter to the lords of those hundreds or manors. Its office was to view the frank pledges, that is, the freemen within the liberty, to present by jury crimes happening within the jurisdiction, to punish trivial misdemeanors. It has now, however, for the most part, fallen into total desuetude. Though in some manors, a court of leet is still periodically held for the transaction of the administration of business of the manor. Now let's go to the manor, shall we? Ah, here we are. Manor. A house, dwelling, seat or residence. In English law, the manor was originally a tract of land granted out by the king to a lord or other great person in fee. It was otherwise called a barony or lordship, and apparent to it was the right to hold a court called the court baron. The lands compromised in the manor were divided into terrea tenementales, tenemental lands or bochland, and terra dominiensis, or demesne lands. The former were given the lord of the manor to his followers or retainers in freehold. The latter were such, bear with me, were such share for his own use, but of these part were held by tenants in copyhold, i.e. those holding a copy of the record in the Lord's Court, and part under the name of the Lord's Waste, save for the public roads and commons and pasture for the Lord and tenants. The tenants considered in their relation to the court baron and to each other were called parius curiae. The word also signified the franchise of having a manor with jurisdiction for a court baron and the right to the rents and services of copyholders. Basically what they've got, that's what the councils are doing. They hold courts of length and they sign their own things. Just like the old hundreds. If you look into what a hundred is, that's the same thing. It's a lord having, dealing with his property, what he wants to do. I'll give you an example. The United Kingdom has a constitution, doesn't it? And that constitution is made up of habeas corpus, Bill of Rights, Magna Carta, statute law, case law, and so on and so forth. And it encompasses the Declaration, Universal Declaration of Human Rights and Freedom, and also encompasses the Human Rights Act. When you go into these courts for the liability orders, they don't give a monkey about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. They don't give a monkey about the Vienna Convention and the Bangalore Principles, which states that everybody is entitled to a fair hearing, and every case has to be looked at on its own individual merit. So they don't follow any of these things. They just stamp a liability order, right? And that affects 2,000 plus people, because they hire the court out for the day. They hire the room within a magistrate's building and call it a court. It is a court. It's a manorial court of lease, or 100, whichever way you want to put it. That's exactly what it is. They are judge, jury and executioner. And I'll give you an example. We've got the Constitution of the United Kingdom, which has just gone through what it is, right? Why does a local council need its own constitution? Every one of them's got a constitution which is totally different from the United Kingdom. If you look at the constitution of your local council, it only envisages the Human Rights Act. Doesn't go in about laws, oh yeah, we uphold the Declaration, Universal Declaration of Human Rights and Freedom, or we observe the Bangalore Principles, we do this. No. They've got their own constitution, and the citizens are the property. They are the property. And if you say you're a citizen, that means you're saying, yeah, I'm your property and I've got to pay your council tax. That's where the thing lies. Now, so we are owned by the local councils, because they probably put a private member's bill in, and got private members to push it forward with the parliamentary agents and get their own laws so that they can call you a citizen and they can find their citizens whenever they bloody well want to. This is where all your parking tickets have come in. This is where all your bloody lowering the speed limits have come in all over the country.
Have you come across one of Simon Spaniard's latest postings, which discovered that under one of the local government acts in 1880...
Inhabitants.
Yeah, they're basically all of our liabilities are their liabilities.
Yeah, but that's only for inhabitants. Look, you see, the thing is, they're calling you a citizen. You've got to bring it to their attention and say, hey, I'm not a citizen. You're getting me mixed up with somebody else, pal. I am an inhabitant. Now, let me tell you a quick story. One of the lads that comes to our meet, John, he was well aware of that, the Local Government Act, Chapter 41, Section 79, Subsection 2. He was very well aware of that because he comes to every meeting. And he got a letter off the council back in March, which is their first offer of a contract. They send you notification of a bill that's going to come in April. They always send you a notification in March that you've set the council tax rate at whatever it is, and they send you an offer of a contract. And then in April, you get the bill. This is what he did. He returned it to sender, no contract. There are only peaceful inhabitants in this abode, and wrote out the, it is the duty, all duties and liabilities of the inhabitants of the county are now the duties of the council of that county. And he wrote that all in red pen, all over the envelope, and sent it back. That was on the offer of the contract. He didn't open it, he knew what it was. He didn't get a bill, and he's heard nothing since. And that is it. He did not get a council tax bill.
Oh, that's pretty good, isn't it? That sounds like...
Because they send you, and that's the bill, the thing that they send you in March is a notification of a contract. He refused that contract. Didn't even open it and said, no, sod off, I'm an inhabitant, I don't contract. And he didn't even receive a bill. And to this day, he's not heard a thing of them. And now, where are we? April, November.
That's
a fact. I know that to be true. So the trick is, don't open the notification of the bill when you get it in March. Scribble all over it, what you want, no contract, whatever you want, and send it back. There are only peaceful inhabitants here. That's a fact. I just want to bring you, here's one for you, Nick. Because we never read dictionaries, do we? I read legal dictionaries. And I've got a dictionary here now, it's called Osborne's Concise Law. And you can get this from the Temple Bar, it'll cost you 12 quid. You might wait a week or two for it, right? And it's the one that the solicitors use. Instead of getting a bloody big black small thing, right? But here's one. Colour. What does colour mean? We all think, oh, it's red, or it's black, or it's blue. It's the name of a shade. Well, this is what colour means. Any appearance, pretext, or pretense, or fictitious allegation of a right, thus a person is said to have no colour of title when he has not even a prima facie title. It's a fiction, it's a fictitious allegation. So, colour we also know as hue. Don't we?
Yeah.
Human. So, it's a fictitious allegation of a man. A hue man is not a man. It's the colour of a man. Because that's what hue means in the real world, not their big and fictitious bloody world. Right, but this is the thing that they're using against us. So when you look at the Human Rights Act and the Declaration, Universal Declaration of Rights and Freedoms, and you look at the word human, well, I'm afraid it doesn't relate to you. And the Human Rights Act 1998 does not relate to a man. Does not relate to a man.
And
because if it did relate to a man, it wouldn't have Hugh Man in it. And it certainly wouldn't say every natural and legal person is entitled to the peaceful use of the property. Because if it was a man's act instead of a human act, let's say man is a human, right? It would not say every natural or legal person is entitled to the peaceful possession of the property, because we know what a legal person is and we know what a natural person is. A natural person is somebody that has come from India, Pakistan, Iran, Australia, and naturalized themselves in this country by taking an oath, and the United Kingdom legal citizen person fiction was created. That's a natural person. A legal person, we know what that is, right? So a human rights act cannot be a man rights act, can it?
I've been wondering about that for ages, because so much of the stuff that comes out of the United Nations is couched in exactly those terms and looks to be entirely beneficial, but what you're saying is this is why it's irrelevant.
Right, okay. Pearson, are you ready for this? This again is Osborne's Concise Law Dictionary. Pearson, the object of rights and duties. The object of rights and duties.
Capable
of having rights and being liable to duties. Persons are two kinds, natural and artificial. A natural person is a human being. An artificial person is a collection or succession of natural persons forming a corporation.
And neither of those are men.
Let me finish that. It says, listen to what it says. An artificial person is a collection or succession of natural persons forming a corporation. A natural person is not a man forming a corporation. Now, how old were you when you left home, Nick?
Well, I think I was around 18. So they tell me anyway.
Why did you leave home?
God, you don't know my family, do you?
No, why did you leave home?
I guess the official reason was to go to college, but I think I would have probably gone anyway.
Right, well, I left home because I was seeing a girlfriend, right? And I stayed out late. You know what it's like. And I was getting on late, you know, 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning. And my dad said, "Mike, that's it, lad. While you're living in this house, you follow my rules. If not, get out and get your own place." So guess what? I got out and got my own place.
Yeah.
Because he makes the rules. It's his house. And I have to follow, because I'm subordinate to him, because he's my creator. Right? Because he created me. Or he... whatever Savo wants to say, right? But he made me. I was subordinate to him. And I had to leave that house because I had to follow his rules. And I wasn't going to follow his rules because I was too much busy fornicating, right? So, right, what do we have in this country? We have the House of Commons and the House of Lords, and they make the rules. And if you don't want their rules, get out of the house. Which brings me to which is really, really, really powerful stuff. And I haven't had the balls to do it, but I will do it if I can find it. Right, okay, just bear with me. Right, everybody should, if you don't like the rules of this house, get out of it. Get out of it. There is a thing called civil death. Civil death, not debt, D-E-A-T-H, death. Right, and here's the definition within Osborne's, but you get lots of different definitions on the internet. Loss of a legal personality, as on banishment or profession of religion. That's interesting, isn't it?
It is.
Right, that is. Right, a civil death. If you get a civil death, right, you're not recognised by the government, so they will not come to your defence for any matter whatsoever. And guess what? You don't have to recognise their laws. You become an outlaw. You're outside of their law. And anyone can kill you because you're already not there. You're not part of their rules. You're not there. That's it. They don't recognise you. No. You can have a civil death. You can declare yourself dead. Right, but if you do, and you're walking around, guess what? You become an enemy of the state because they can't deal with you through the courts, because they can't contract with you and you can't contract with them. There is another way, just bear with me. So, but did you recognise, it said, on banishment, which means thrown out of the country, but it also said on profession of religion. Now, when somebody gets sentenced to death in Texas or the United States, and by the way, they're bringing the death penalty back here, if you've not read through the parliament.
That's your capital punishment bill, isn't it?
Yeah, right. It's coming. Peter Bone and Philip Hollerbone and the same crew are bringing all these bills in, the private members' bills, right? Now, let's say you're sentenced to life. The likes of Ian, what's his name? The Moors murder.
Ian Brady.
Yeah. He is civilly dead. Right? He's not recognised anymore. Because he's in prison for his life. That's it. He doesn't have a legal person anymore. Right? And guess what? Is he getting locked up? Bloody right, he is. Have you ever been up to Ashworth where he stays? I'm telling you, that prison is like a bloody hotel. He gets very well looked after, thank you. And that goes the same if you're in the United States and you're waiting for your death sentence. You do not have a legal personality. Do they look after you? Bloody right they do. You don't get beat up there if you're on death row. You get proper food and all the rest of it. You don't get the same chance as the other prisoners. Right? Because you're one of God's creatures. And they have to look after you. Although they are administering God's law on them because it's royal law. Right? Which is getting destroyed now, by the way. That's the idea of all this. You get shut of your Queen's benches. But anyway. Now, if you declare yourself a man of God and you are here to seek God, and you profess your religion, you can have a civil death. Now, could that be why, when you declare yourself a church, that you don't get taxed, you don't get council tax, you don't fall into all these things that you have to pay money for. Could that be the case? I'm saying to you, it certainly, with my research, it certainly looks that when you profess a religion to serve God, the Creator, whatever that is, because as it is now, we are all serving God, the country. Who makes the rules? God. Who made the law of gravity? God. Who made the law of plants growing? God. Who makes the laws that you have to adhere to? God, the country. God, the country is a God because it makes the laws for its property. God has property. God, the creator, the property, he has all this universe and solar system and everything. Well, God, the country, you are their property because you haven't declared yourself a man, a child of God. And by the way, if you're searching for your creator and to live in God's law, if you want to live in God's law and be a good, God-fearing man, you cannot serve two gods. You cannot serve God's law and the law that comes through from the country, because both of them are in total opposition.
I've got a couple of questions on that subject that have sprung to mind whilst you were talking. One is that I've been listening to Rob Freeman, who I know, I've heard him quoting you a couple of times, and he says that he went into court not because he had to, but because he wanted to find out why people weren't winning, and he realised it was a three-stage process, and that the first stage was basically merchant law of the sea. The second stage is trust law, and the third
ecclesiastical.
That's right. And what he says is that each time he said to them, "My God doesn't recognise your God," and at that point the whole thing has stopped dead in its tracks.
That's right. That's right. Because you cannot serve two gods. You can't serve two gods. And I tell you what, Nick, I know most of the people listening now are not Bible readers. But let me tell you this. The first commandment states, "I am the Lord your God, you shall have no gods before me." The second commandment states, "Thou shalt not make a graven image of thyself." And what do we have? We have a graven image, an image inscribed, which is the legal person. And by the way, it's not ours, it's theirs.
What's the name of that guy who you sent me the links to, him talking about the Ten Commandments? Because they were brilliant vids.
Well, there's a few people I'm really impressed with at the present time. The Bible is a code book, by the way. That's exactly what it is. You've got Bill Donahue.
That was the one. That's the one I really recommend. He's got 10 vids up there, folks, about the Ten Commandments, and they explain this stuff. I mean, he's a bit crazy and all that, and that's a fairly funny delivery, but he explains this business of not having any strange gods before me, because that means having no strange gods before you, basically.
That's right.
They're well worth looking at.
I am the Lord your God. You are all your own gods. It says, "I am," not some bloody, "I am God. I am the Lord your God. You shall not have no God before me. And thou shalt not make a graven image of thyself." And if you look in Revelations and Matthew and all the rest of them, it says Matthew chapter 2, 6 to 10, I think it is. And I'm sorry, I don't want to be religious. I'm not being religious. I'm saying that this stuff is in the Bible, right? It says, "If you love thy neighbour as you do yourself, ye do well. However, if you show respect to persons, you sin." My goodness me, that's in the bloody Bible. And it's not there just once, it's there loads of times.
That's what I like about the Bill Donahue thing, is that he ranges widely right across the Old and the New Testament,
And not only our holy books, but the Vedas and several other places as well, showing again and again and again, this is what the book is telling us.
I just want to say this, Nick. Bill Donahue has got over 600 videos up.
God.
He's got over 600 hours up. The one I sent you is just the Ten Commandments.
I've watched them. They're really... Yeah. And just another question on this business of the civil death, because one of the other private members' bills that we talked about last time we met was the access to public services bill. Well, no, the electoral roll bill, where they're offering to deprive us of public services if our name is not on the electoral roll. Do you think that might be connected as well with this?
Oh, I want to take it to something else as well. Yeah, if you don't go on an electoral roll, you can't have public services. But I want to take you to this. The BBC licensing fee, folks, right, has been, it's getting decriminalised. That's good, isn't it? Isn't that good news? But let me read this out to you. Come on, hold up. Right. Civil penalties. Look at it yourself. BBC licence fee is being decriminalised. And basically this is what they're doing. They're turning it into a civil death. Right. And if a CEO employed by the BBC, by the way, so there's going to be lots of jobs for CEOs with the licensing people very soon when this goes through. And it comes into force on the 1st of January 2017, right? If a CEO working for the BBC, who will have a uniform, has grounds to believe that you have a television set, whether or not you're using it or not, doesn't matter. He can issue you with a penalty notice, just like the guy in the park and the parking ticket guys. He can issue you with a penalty notice if he has reason to believe that you've got a television in your house. Whether he sees it or whether he doesn't see it, if he's got reason to believe, he will give you a penalty notice. Now, guess what? He doesn't have to give it to you. He can just slap it on the front door. Isn't that great? So if you've got an aerial on your roof that's been there for 20 years, right, and you've thrown your telly out, but the aerial's still up there because you haven't got a ladder to get it down, you'll go, oh, that's reasonable grounds to believe you've got a television. Slap a penalty fine on your door. This is freaking unbelievable what's going on. Unbelievable what these bastards are doing right now.
Well, it seems to me they're getting really desperate.
Yeah, that's better. But there's all sorts going on. If you have a look, folks, bills before Parliament, every one of you, if you look through all of them, right, at the very least, 50% of those bills are going to affect you, right? And unless you do something about it and write to these Tolax, these criminals, and they're all criminals, every one of them is a criminal in that bloody parliament. I don't give a shit who it is, they're all criminals. So, you know, we've got to write letters to these cats to show them that we're watching what's going on. We are watching you. And anybody who votes, or even registered to vote, get yourself out of the voting system. Never mind what they say, find your 2,000 quid. Load of bollocks, you're not a citizen. You're men and you're women.
And isn't it right that actually being on the electoral roll, rather like having a bank account, makes you a citizen in the eyes of these people?
Absolutely, but not only that, if you're on the electoral register, guess what? They get £700 off your order for each one that's registered.
Do they?
Local council get £700 for everyone that's registered on their books, yeah. Bollocks, sussed that out. Don't ask me what the source was, but everything Bollocks says, he backs up with the paperwork. So if you want to know where he found it, ask Bollocks yourself. If you don't know Rob Bollocks, just go on to We Are Change website and type in Rob Bollocks Ashton Meath. And all his videos there, all his talks and all. If you can understand him, because he's a real Scot, yeah, you know what I mean.
Well, again, I think it really is important. I mean, I think another thing that Rob Freeman's been saying is that the actions of the powers that were are becoming less and less reasonable, more and more violent, more and more thuggish. And he reckons that's because our methods are becoming effective and because people are starting to stop paying, because people are starting to write in blue ink to tell these guys what they're thinking. They're learning to write the word notice on top of something. They're learning that a complaint is a different thing, and that really, I agree with you entirely. Well, I mean, obviously, a couple of years ago, I realised that the time had come to start doing something about it. But that it really is getting crucial that we do, that we don't just sit anymore at our computer pressing buttons and listening to it and learning it. We've got to start acting ourselves, because they are acting against us.
In every way. Every way. Look, the stress that they're putting the ordinary working man under. You go to work in the morning now, right, and if you're in a city, I can bet you it takes you 20 minutes longer over a 10-mile journey to get to work than what it did 6 or 7 years ago, because of all these frigging bus lanes and speed bumps and all this nonsense they're putting everywhere, and the central reservations, you know, and they're putting these central reservations right outside bus stops, so you can't overtake the bus. You've got to wait for the bus to move before you can carry on your journey. Now, that's putting everybody under stress. It's stealing more of your time, right, and it's stealing more of your energy, and when you get to work, you're under total stress, and then the boss says, you're 2 minutes late. That puts you in more stress, but that's a different subject altogether. But the whole game, their whole game, is to put humanity under a constant state of stress. Because while you're under stress, you can't think straight, you get ill, and you diarrhea. So they don't have to give you a pension.
Yeah.
And they don't want to see you living a happy life in your latter years, where you can sit back and go, what is this all about? Let me have a look and see if the internet will give me some answers. There might be somebody on the internet who may have worked this whole game out. I've been on this bloody planet 65 years. I'm no better off than what I was when I came in, right? I look around, I've got a very modest home. Right, I've got a little pension off these bastards. I've paid into this system. Everything that you buy is everything, all that money that you use, every penny of it is tax. Not 80%. Every bloody penny is tax. Every penny of it. Never mind profit. Oh, this company's got profit. No. The government gets it all in the end. Right? And we are that government's gods. But unfortunately, we've let the bloody thing turn around, and they are our gods now. And we've got to bloody start taking a stand now and say, excuse me, hang on, I'm back. I'm here. You know, the creator who created the government, because we created the government, and we let it do its own thing. We fell asleep for many, many hundreds of years. Now we're waking up, and we've got to make these bastards know that we're waking up, and we've got to put them to task, and we've got to say, hey, we know you're fiddling. We know you're fiddling. The MP of my area, bloody £75,000 on computers, 3 years on the run.
Must be nice computers, eh?
£225,000 on computers in 3 years. And guess what? He's got an office no bigger than my bloody living room with one computer in it. £25,000 on stationery? A year? You're taking the piss out of me. And guess what? When was the last time one of you who were listening went to an MP to moan about something, moan about an act that you see going through Parliament that you don't like? When was the last time you went in and said, hey, you, I've been to see the MP of this area 4 times over the last 2 years, right? And he has a surgery once a month on a Saturday morning, right? And he actually works on a Saturday morning once a month for 3 hours. Now, the 3 or 4 times I've been in there to speak to him, only on one occasion was there one other person waiting to see him.
Mm.
They've got an easy life. Our job is to make them work for us. They get a fortune from working for us. Who has been there to say, hey, you, hang on, you're supposed to represent me. Why aren't you doing this? The MP of this area is a Labour MP, and right throughout the whole governance of Tony Blair's being Prime Minister, have a guess how many times he voted against the government. Have a guess. With all the Acts of Parliament that went through, Tony Blair brought over 3,500 new Acts of Parliament, new laws out. How many times did this fella vote against him? He did not vote against Tony Blair once.
Well, it's not really their job to vote against, is it?
It's their job if you tell them. Go in and see these kids and say, hey, listen, pack it in. By the way, what's all this person nonsense? I spoke to this Joe Benton. I said, listen, do you represent the people of this constituency, or do you represent the citizens? Bearing in mind, I know what the difference is. And he looked at me, he said, I represent the citizens of this constituency, whether they vote for me or not.
Yeah.
And I said, what about the people? And he just raised his eyebrow and put his hands out and said, basically, no.
Mm.
So if you're not a citizen, I'm afraid that these bastards don't represent any of your interests. But there is a thing in the council constitution which says it must, and every council is the same, by the way, it must take into account everything that it does and how it affects the inhabitant. Now, that Sefton Council, the word inhabitant appears once, and that's what it says.
Can you repeat that for me?
It says it must take into account everything that it does and the effect it may have on an inhabitant. And that's the only time the word inhabitant is used in Sefton Council's constitution. Everything else, it's citizen this, citizen that, citizen this, you know, and all that. Once it uses the word inhabitant, and that's the way it uses it, it must take into account everything it does and the effect it will have on that inhabitant.
Mm.
You are not citizens, folks. You do not work for these. The MPs are citizens. You're not. And it's time we brought these buggers to task. Now, if I go in there on my own, which I have done on 4 occasions, what do you think will happen? I get ignored. But if you all go in, all of you, and I don't know how many people listen to this, pick up one of those acts that's going through Parliament right now, one that you don't like, and you go and see your MP at the next surgery and say, hey, what the hell are the British Transport Police getting on for? What the hell are you doing bringing capital punishment back? What the hell are you doing taking royal assent from parliamentary acts of parliament? Because there goes there goes the whole constitution of this country, and then we are 100% in the Napoleonic law, and we have got no recourse. The only recourse we've got now is the Queen's Court, because she took her oath of office in all her courts to uphold God's law, and God's law of the Ten Commandments, right? And she took an oath of office to uphold in her courts. The Ministry of Justice are her courts. Their court of the God-called United Kingdom. Gods make laws. And the United Kingdom is a God because we chose to not recognise God's law, and we created a God to create its own laws for our benefit. Well, that God, the United Kingdom, is now abusing us on a big time scale. So we have to go back to the proper God's law, which is thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not do this and that, and blah, blah, blah. And first two commandments, important, is thou shalt not make graven images of thyself, which is your person, and you use it every day, and when you use that person, you have duties and liabilities attached to it, because you've never had permission to use it. When was the last time you wrote to the Crown and said, can I use this person? None of you have. Right? I've informed them that I'm going to use it, and I've already told them I'm not. All duties and liabilities are yours, they're not mine, but I will use it when I want to, because I have the right to use the fuck, don't I?
I think ultimately as well, all of these are individuals, and they are criminals because they are causing substantial harm, loss and damage, not just to one man, but to many, many men. And in the end, we've surely got to start holding them accountable for it.
We've got to. Knowledge is nothing without action. Knowledge is nothing. It's all right knowing these things, unless you make a stand and do something to stop it, and do something to let them know you know what's going on. And when the shit hits the fan, we're coming for you. I'm warning them, hey, you're here to save me, not the other way round. We've got to take our power back, because they've run away with it, and they're abusing everybody. Bloody hell, look at the Acts of Parliament, because the Cancer Act. The Cancer Act, 1930, whatever it was, takes away the right for anybody other the pharmaceutical, big pharma, to treat cancer. If you're treating cancer in any other way than what they say, you can be locked up. Now I know people, I know plenty of people who've got cures for cancer. We all know them, we all know them. But these bastards, these MPs, voted something in because they were getting bones off Big Pharma, giving them the right to treat it. They'll never cure cancer now, the pharmaceutical companies. Why should they cure it? Wordsmiths, these people, all of them, are criminals. Do you know how much a retired judge gets a month? And I'm not talking about a High Court judge, I'm talking about a district judge, a retired district judge, £25,000 a month retirement. And guess what? If he goes in and stands, because judges don't really retire, he can go back to work whenever he wants. He gets paid again. £25,000 a month. No wonder they don't serve justice.
They can't afford to, can they, really? Not on that kind of money.
Jesus, £25,000 a year, Nick, to you and me, is a fortune.
Yeah.
These bastards get it every month. Every month. Whether they sit on their arse or whether they go and do a bit more. If you go in the courts again, you get a bit more money. Don't ask me what it is, but I know you get £25,000 more. That's the district judge. The district. The circuit ones are on higher, and the high court judges are on more. Sitting there with a bleeding wig on, playing an act. It's an act to them. They have no empathy for us. We're just the bloody idiots. This is what Boris Johnson, yesterday or the day before. The reason why people are poor is because they're thick. Have you ever met a thicker person than that in your life? Have you ever seen a thicker man in your life than Boris Johnson? And he's got the nerve to say that.
Is that what he said?
That's what he said. He said the reason why, right, there's poor in this country is because they're thick and they won't educate themselves. The bastard. How dare he say that? The people have been programmed into not being able to realise how to educate themselves.
And the reason why they're poor is because they're having everything taken off them.
Everything's been stolen. Well, you've got a God-given right of usufruct on this planet. Whatever the creation was, the very fact that we're here means we've got right of usufruct. To use it. To pick apples from a tree. To pick bloody corn and make stuff. And to use the land. We've got the very right to do that. The very fact that we're here. Load of magicians, right, that get together and say, oh, you know, that's a manipulate these people. Oh, we're going to make ourselves extra rich and we'll leave them dead poor. What mentality does that? These people are evil.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going off on one. I'm sorry about ranting, folks.
I think that was a handsome call to arms, Dave. I really look forward to hearing the next round of letters that come back to the ones that you were talking about earlier. I've really enjoyed listening to you, Dave. Thanks very much for coming on. And think, you know, it's a pretty intense argument for action. The time is really, if we're gonna take advantage of this age of change that we're supposedly living in, if we're going to start moving to some sort of unity consciousness instead of the separation that's being enforced between us, then the time really, really is now.
This is Media Streaming International Radio.